Hello, everybody. I'm Roberto Sonnino. I work on the Visual Studio team, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about the Visual Studio 3D Starter Kit, and we're going to actually develop an app together using the Starter Kit. So this video is the companion of a blog post series that we published in the Visual C++ blog. And in the blog series, you're going to be able to follow the steps at your own pace. But here we're going to go through the first to the part one and part two as fast as we can, and we're going to show how it's done live. So also you can get all the code on CodePlex. DiceRoller3D.codeplex.com has all the code, and we separated the check-ins per part. So you can get the check-in that corresponds to part one, another one for part two, and so on. And when we publish part three, you're going to get the full project there as well. So let's start. So if you download the code from the Visual Studio 3D Starter Kit from the blog and you run it, what you get is a blank screen. And now we're going to get this empty screen and start filling it up with some assets. So the first step to develop an app is to decide what's going to be your app. In this case, we're going to develop an app for a dice roller. So it's an app that you have a die, and then you click it, and then it rolls, and you can see all the numbers. It generates a random row every time you click it. And in the end of the series, we're going to show you how to port this app to Windows RT devices and Windows Phone devices using the same code. So the first step is to actually create your assets. I'm going to create here a cube that will represent the die. So if you go here on the Starter Kit folder, in the Assets folder, I'm going to do Add New Item, and I'm going to create a new mesh. And here you can select FBX file. I'm going to call this mesh die.fbx. So you can also select the folder. I'm going to put it on my shared assets folder. And this folder is why do we call it shared? Because actually, this folder contains all the assets that are shared between Windows 8 and Windows Phone applications when you're using the Starter Kit. And if you're using Visual Studio Express, you're not going to have the mesh editor. But that's not a problem. You can actually download the mesh from the blog post as well. So we have a zip with all the assets used in all parts of this tutorial. So you have this empty scene. And to add something here, you go to the toolbox and you drag whatever you want. I'm going to drag a cube. And then you can rotate, you can look around the scene, you can change the properties. But all we need for this phase is just a cube. So I'm going to save the cube. The cube is here in my assets. And then you're going to ask, how does this FBX file get compiled into something that I can use? So if you right-click the FBX file and see in properties, you're going to see that it actually has a special property called Mesh Content Pipeline. And this property is what allows it to be compiled to something useful in runtime. It's a CMO file that it can be loaded by the Starter Kit. So let's do that. Let's load this file and let's show it on the screen. So I'm going to go to my game implementation, game.cpp. And on the initialize method, I'm going to load that mesh that we just created. So to do that, you just call a method called mesh load from file. So I'm going to copy the code here. So this method calls load from file. You need to pass an object called graphics. That it's an abstraction for all the graphics resources, like the device context and the D3D device. You have to pass the file name. Those two parameters are in case you use relative folders. In our case, we're not using any relative folders for our assets. And the last one is a vector of meshes where the meshes will be in the end. So if you run this, you will not see anything on the screen because we loaded the file, but we didn't display it yet. So the next step is going to be to render the cube onto the screen. So if you go to the render method, which is the next one right here, after you clear the screen, you can draw your meshes. So that's what we're going to do right now. I'm going to get the code for rendering our meshes. So what does this code do? This code does that for each mesh, so for each mesh in the mesh models array, vector, we're going to render that mesh And you need to, again, pass graphics so they know, so the mesh knows how to render in that graphics device. And you need to pass a transformation, which is a matrix that represents how the mesh will be transformed. In our case, this transformation is the identity matrix. So this matrix doesn't transform the object at all. It will be the same size as the mesh defined, and it will be in the position will be 0, 0, 0, will be centered in the origin. So now we're rendering something in the screen. So if I run here, you can see that the cube is now showing in the screen. But you can see the cube is a little small. So let's change the camera to make the cube bigger in our view. So how do you do that? In the create window size dependent resources, you're going to find the code for the camera. Why did we put it there? It's because the camera is something that depends on the window size. If your window is bigger, you need to set up the camera so that everything fits. If your window is, for example, portrait, you have to set up the camera accordingly. So in this case, you can see that the position of the camera is set to 0, 6, minus 18. So this is a position x, y, z in the space. Remember, our cube is on 0, 0, 0. So if you want to make stuff bigger, you just reduce these numbers to make the camera be closer to the cube. So if I make it bigger, if I pull the camera in and then I run it again, you're going to see that the cube will look bigger. Great. So this cube is nice, but it doesn't look like a die at all. We have to add a texture to it so that it will look like a real die. So and actually, this is where we end part one in the blog series. So this would be the first post. It goes up until here. In post number two, we tell you how to actually in post number one, we finish by adding the texture, which is what we're going to do now. So to do that, you need to download the texture from the website, from the blog post, and then you add an existing item, and you're going to find the texture that you downloaded here. So I'm going to add this item here to my project, and then I'm going to open my die, and I'm going to apply this texture here. So I click the cube, and then in the properties toolbar here, let me make it a little bit bigger, I'm going to go and look for texture 1, and apply this texture that I downloaded to the cube. So this is what it looks like. And if you run again, this cube already looks like a die. There you go. So this is where part one ends. And on part two, we teach you how to create animations. So we're going to create an animation so that when you click anywhere in the screen, the cube will spin and will display something. We'll display a number from 1 to 6. So it will rotate, we'll randomly generate a number. We're going to show that number in the cube. So how does that work? Every time you want to create an animation, you need to be worrying about three things. You need to worry where you started, where you're going, and then the current step of the animation. So we're going to keep track of the time, and we're going to keep track of the current rotation at every frame. So with the initial, the final, and the current step at every frame, you're going to be able to position the cube, like rotate it a little bit every frame so the animation is smooth. And also we're going to have a Boolean flag that tells you if the animation is running or not, so that we don't keep spinning the cube after the animation is over. So how do we do that? I'm going to open here game.h, which is our header file. And here we're going to define some fields that will help us keep track of all that information. So which fields are those? Let me paste that here. So we have five fields that I'm adding to the game header. A Boolean flag, as I said, to keep track of if the animation is running or not. We have an animation time, which is the time since the animation started. And then we have the initial, the current, and the target rotation. And they are float threes. That means they are triples of x, y, and z. Each one is a float. And then you use that to calculate the rotation. So x, y, and z are actually angles in radians. So 0 means 0, and pi means 180 degrees. Great. So we have all those fields. And also we're going to need a method which is going to be called when you want to start the animation. And that method will be roll die. So here I'm adding a new method that rolls the die, that executes, that starts the animation process. And now we're going to implement that method. The next step is to make this method do something. So let's go to our game CPP. And sorry, I don't need this breakpoint. And then let's add the implementation for game row die. So this is what it looks like. And again, all this code is on the blog post, and I'm going line by line here, but on the blog post you can go at your own pace and copy from there. So what does row die do? You have to, first of all, make sure that the initial rotation is set to the current rotation. That means you have to restart your reference points to whatever you were before. And you need to set your targets to the place where you want to go. So for starters, let's set the target to be 0 pi 0. That means rotate the die to 6. So it starts at 1 at 0, 0, 0. Let's rotate it to 6 when you click row die. And then at this time is when you're going to reset the animation time as well. You're going to say the animation has just started, the progress is 0. And you're going to set is animation running to true. So that will be a flag that we're going to use in another place to know if the animation is running or not. So let's do that. Now that we have the row die method, we're going to need to update the position of the cube, actually the rotation of the cube, at every frame. So the correct place to do that is update, the method update. This method is pretty convenient because it gives you the time between this frame and the previous frame. So instead of having to calculate every time related to when the app was started, you're going to calculate related to relative to the previous frame. So it's much easier to calculate this updating cycle. So I'm going to get some code here. I'm going to paste some code to update the rotation at every frame. And let's go line by line on this code to understand how it works. So the first line checks if the animation is running. If the animation is not running, update should not do anything at all. So if the animation is running, we update the time. So remember, we were at 0, and we're going to add the amount that changed in the previous frame, so this time delta. We just add that to animation time. The next step is to calculate the progress of the animation, which is the percentage of the animation that is completed. So here I have a constant that represents the total duration of this animation, half a second. And then I say that the progress is the animation time divided by the animation duration. And then I clamp that using min, I clamp that to 1 in such a way that the animation never goes beyond 100%, never goes beyond 1. So we take the current time, divide by the duration of the animation, and then clamp that to 100%. So with this progress, and since we know the initial and the target, we can now calculate the current by doing current equals initial plus progress times target minus initial. So this is a simple linear interpolation. It's the current one will be the initial one plus a percentage times the how much I want to travel. And this will look like a line if you plot that in a graph. And every time you do calculations with vectors, it's very convenient to load the float trees into XM vectors and then store them back into float tree in the end. Because with the XM vector structure, you can actually do this operations really easily. So you can add vectors, multiply vectors, so DirectX knows how to handle them the fastest way possible whenever you use XM vector as a type. So the way to convert between XM float 3 and XM vector is by using load float 3 and star float 3. And you have that for other types like float 4, matrix. You can also load that into other types that are easier to calculate. So in this case, we're using XM vector. And finally, if the animation gets to 100%, 1, then we stop running. You can see that we put bigger than or equal, but we could just have put equal because our progress is clamped to 1 anyway. So what we do is we stop animating when we're done. So it's cool, we already got an update method that updates our rotation. What we need to do now is to make sure that this rotation is affecting the rendering, because we are updating it, but we're not doing anything with it at render time. So let's go to our render method and add the code to make this transformation be applied. So we had XM matrix identity as our transformation. That means the cube is always at the same place. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to change that to a different transformation. So this transformation here is XM matrix rotation row pitch yaw from vector. It's a very long name, but it's a very simple method actually. What it does is it loads an XM vector and it calculates a rotation matrix based on the row pitch and yaw from that vector. And row pitch and yaw, they are actually the x, y, and z rotations. So this method, all it does is it takes a vector that has an x, y, and z rotation in radians and creates a matrix and calculates the matrix that will transform a 3D object. So in that case, you don't need to actually learn about how the matrices work, especially for this simple transformation like rotation. DirectX already has a bunch of methods that will do these calculations for you. It will calculate all the matrices based on other primitives like angles. For example, you can calculate a translation matrix only by giving the offsets. So it's, you have a lot of helpers to get to calculate those matrices. We're using one for rotation. And now, if you run this, it will actually rotate the die. But there is one thing missing. We didn't call the rowDie method. So we need to add something in the UI that will row the die, that will call rowDie. And to do that, we're going to go to our XAML page. So we have a page here, directxpage.xaml. And in the directx page, we already have an event for onTapped. This event, it's triggered every time you tap anywhere in the screen. So what we're going to do is the simplest thing possible. Anytime you tap on the screen, we're going to roll the die. We're going to call render roll die, which is the method we just implemented that starts the animation. So now let's run. So if I tap anywhere in the screen, the die rolls from 1 to 6, exactly what we wanted. I can even show it again. So if you tap anywhere in the screen, die rolls from 1 to 6, very smooth, nice. Now what we need to do is actually add a random number. Sorry. So now what we have to do is to add a random number generator. And that one will allow us to have different results every time we roll the die. Right now we're only rolling to 6. We're going to add a random number so we can roll to different places. And how do you do that? So we're going to create the most basic random number generator in C++, or actually in C, which is the rand function, R-A-N-D, rand. So to do that, in the initialize function, I'm going to initialize my random seed with the current time. Why do I do that? If I don't do that, it will initialize the random generator always with the same seed. And because of that, you're going to get always the same sequence of rows every time you run the app. So that's not very fun. You want, every time you run the app, you want different random numbers. So to do that, I'm going to call the srand function, which is seeds the random number generator. And I'm going to call that using the time function, as the seed. So that means I'm going to get the current time in ticks from the OS, and I'm going to pass that as the seed for the random number generator. And the time function, it requires a special header, which is time.h. I'm going to include that header here, time.h. So with that, we have our random number generator seed. And now we can call the rand function to generate random numbers. That's exactly what I'm going to do now. I'm going to go back to our rowDie function. And instead of having a fixed target rotation, I'm going to change that by some code that will actually roll the die. So I'm going to calculate the current row. The current row is rand, which is the function in the C library that generates a random number, mod 6 plus 1. Why the mod 6 plus 1? If you take rand, it will generate a big integer number. If you do mod 6, it will make the number between 0 and 5. And then if you do plus 1, that number will be between 1 and 6, just like a regular die. And then you're going to take this row result. And for each case of the row result, we're going to go to a different target rotation. So if it goes to 1, we don't rotate. If we go to 6, then we go to that rotation pi. And the other ones are cases rotating 90 degrees to one side, to the other side, in x, in y, and z. So very simple. It's very simple to calculate the target rotations based on the number that we fell in. So if you run this now, you're going to get the exact same thing. But when you click, you're going to get different numbers. So you can get 4, you can get 3, 1. Every time you click, you're going to get a different number. But this is still pretty boring. It's not exciting. Like sometimes it stays on the same number. It's not really a very dynamic presentation. So we're going to add some flair to this dice roller by making the die jump. So what we're going to do now is every time you tap the die, or actually tap anywhere in the screen, the die will jump and roll to a different number, just like we're throwing a real die. And how do we make it jump? So the same way that we had a bunch of variables to keep track of our rotation, we're going to add one more variable to keep track of our y position, our translation. So let's do that. In game.h, I'm going to add a translation field here. So it's a float, current translation y. And we're going to update that in our update method. And then in the render method, we're going to use that to render our cube in the right position, in the right translation. So let's go to our update method first. And what we're going to do here is very, very simple. At every frame, we are going to calculate our rotation, our translation, after the rotation. So it's only two lines of code. Let me format them correctly. It's only two lines of code. The first line is just a constant, which is the maximum height. So our cube is has a size of 1. And we're setting a constant saying that the jump will go to a maximum height of 2. So it's twice the size of the cube. And we're going to make that the current translation in y is 4 times the height, times the percentage of the animation, times 1 minus percentage. Then you're going to say, why did we choose this equation? So this is the equation of a parabola with height equals max height, and the poles are in 0 and 100%, 0 and 1 in this case. So I'm going to show you a graph of what it looks like. Here we have Wolfram Alpha to help us. So if you plot 4x times 1 minus x, you have a parabola that goes from 0 to 1 in x, and the limit here is 1. So if you multiply this by a max height, you're going to get a parabola that goes to max height. So in our case, we're multiplying that by 2. So if you run this, it will go actually to 2 instead of 1. But it looks exactly the same. So this will simulate the gravity pull, the gravity force. All you need to do now is to make sure that our render actually uses that current translation y for something. And to do that, we're going to get the transformation here, and we're going to multiply that transformation by the translation matrix that is calculated with this y. So all you have to do is multiply the transform by XM matrix translation of 0, y, and 0. That means go to that position, 0, y, and 0, and then the DirectX will calculate the matrix for us, and we can just multiply them using the regular times operator, regular star operator. And if you run now, we're going to get a much more exciting presentation where the die will jump every time you tap the screen. Where every time you tap, you get a little jump. This looks really cool already. It's much more exciting than the regular one. But actually, when you throw a die, it doesn't jump very neatly like this. It doesn't just like jump up and down. It does several multiple spins before it falls down, right? So what we're going to do now is add some random spins to make the presentation even more realistic and even more exciting. And also to make it look like the dice is a little bit more random, to add some random flair. So let's go back to our code, and we're going to add some random spins. How do we do that? The only place I'm going to change the code now is roll die. I'm going to add some random spins to the target rotation. So the target rotation is currently fixed. It's like a fixed number, and that number is usually between minus pi and pi, so it doesn't rotate much beyond that. We're going to add some extra spins, which are multiples of 2 pi. So let me copy the code here. And once again, you can get all this code in the second blog post. But I'm going to go line by line and explain how this code works. So this code does, first of all, I will load the target rotation and current rotation into vectors because I want to do operations with them. And then the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make the target account for the current number of full spins. So when you're seeing the die and the die is facing you and you're seeing 1, you're going to say the rotation is 0, 0, 0. That's not actually true because the die might have rotated several spins, full spins, and landed back in the same number. So what we're doing in this line of code is accounting for that rotation in full spins. So we take the current rotation, we divide it by 2 pi, and then we floor that because we don't want half rotations, and then we multiply again by 2 pi. That makes, like, if the rotation is, I don't know, 2.5 spins, Target will add two spins. So we always add a multiple of 2 pi to the target. And then we have the following two lines. They will randomly add minus 1, 0, or 1 extra spins in each axis. So for each axis, you can see we have a random vector here. And for each axis, it calculates a number between minus 1, 0, or 1. To do that, I do rand modulo 3. That's a number between 0 and 2. And then I do minus 1, and then I have a number between minus 1 and 1. So I do that 3 times. I get 3 random numbers. That's why I call rand 3 times. And then I do target plus equals the random vector times 2 pi. So I want the target to be, you get this random vector, which will be, for example, minus 1, 1, 0, or 0, 1, 1. It will be some triple like that. And you multiply by 2 pi, so you're going to have something like minus 2 pi, 0, 2 pi. And you add that to the target to make it spin full spins. And finally, you store that back into our float 3, so that the rest of the app can use it. So if you run it now, it's going to jump, and it's going to rotate a random number of times. So now this animation is much, much cooler. And it looks more like what you would get if you actually throw a die. So I'm pretty sure you can do a lot of other interesting things, but we're not gonna cover this in the blog series. The last step of the blog series, I'm not gonna show the code here, but it shows you how to port this to Windows RT devices and to Windows Phone devices. So I'm just gonna show the final product, what it looks like. So this is the Windows Phone, and here you can see the cube. Every time you tap it, you get a different number. It's exactly the same code. It looks just the same. And the same for the Surface RT device. So let me open it here. So here we have the same dice roller. And then every time you tap it, you get a different number. And it also supports orientation. So all the interesting things that you want to do with an app, our little sample here, it shows you how to do. Also support Snap View, etc. So to learn more about how to do porting to other devices, you can look at our third blog post. And also you can download the full code in the end of the third blog post or on CodePlex, diceroller3d.codeplex.com. So that's all. If you have any questions, please let us know. Post a comment in the blog or in this video. We'll be monitoring this post. Thank you.